Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Carl Den Vandenberg, CMO at Gigamon. Carl, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ian. I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Gigamon. Gigamon is a network security company, US-based, but present globally. We're about $500 million, and we've been around for about 20 years. And our focus is on providing visibility across the hybrid cloud so that security tools can do their jobs.
When you talk about hybrid cloud and you talk about being a network security company, one of the issues with that is people no longer look at the network. So what is it that people need to be taking attention of?
It's a great question. Part of our mission is that in this move to cloud, which we've been on a journey for some time, the network, as you said, is abstracted. People don't think about it. And yet, what we're finding is that the network and network data plays an incredibly important role in security. It's just that it's been abstracted. In particular, when you look at the tool set in the cloud today, a lot of the tools are based on Melt, metrics, events, logs, and traces. Whereas that is important and necessary as a data input to security tools, the network provides the ultimate source of truth. As you know, when attack protocols happen, often logs are manipulated or suppressed. That's just a standard part of the attack protocol. It becomes a weakness in the system. Network data, on the other hand, is immutable, can't be modified. Big part of our value proposition is the call we're making to the industry is pay attention to network data. A big part of our job is to serve that network data up in a form that's easy for the security tools to consume, whether it be on-premises or in the cloud.
I'm old enough to remember when we used to read a network trace. I'm old enough to have taught people how to read network traces. We no longer do that because of the volume that we've got coming through. But when we look at our network, even with the tools we've got, often it's really hard to understand what application is talking, what endpoint is talking. So whilst it's immutable, understanding what is going over that network has become incredibly more complex, and more so as we've gone to encrypting everything on the network.
Exactly. A little bit more about our technology and why it's relevant here. The whole premise of our technology is to be able to capture this massive volume of network traffic and distill it down to what's most essential for the particular security tool. A lot of the traffic on the network is duplicate. A big part of what our platform and our technology allows is to deduplicate, to filter. For example, network traffic that's from a Netflix or a trusted source doesn't go to your security tool because that's just going to eat up capacity. We filter out all of the noise and provide to the security tools only the traffic that they need to see. And that will depend on the security tool. You mentioned encrypted traffic. We've recently published our annual hybrid cloud security survey. One of the findings in that survey is that, perhaps not surprisingly, 3/4 of the participants trust encrypted data, trust encrypted traffic. But we know that most malware now propagates east-west through encrypted traffic. The problem of encrypted traffic in that it becomes essentially a vector for malware, when you get to the cloud, becomes really hard. How do you, at that scale, with TLS 1.3, where you can't have man in the middle, how do you see inside encrypted traffic? One of the innovations that we came up with as part of our fabric that we announced late last year is called Precryption. It allows you to see encrypted traffic as clear text at the kernel. Before it's encrypted between the kernel and the SSL library, we can see it in clear text form, and we pass it to the tools. We call this precryption, which means you don't have to have any key management or anything like that. You're able to start seeing encrypted traffic in the cloud, which today is pretty much impossible, cost prohibitive. You would use firewalls or other technologies to do that. We could go on about this, Ian, because this is the whole problem of the network and network data, the volume and the complexity. Even though it's very valuable, it is very hard to get to and very hard to manage today.
But there's another challenge there with encryption. We're seeing more and more encryption starting at the endpoint before it goes forward. We're also seeing that as a primary way of exfiltration data. As we move forward to the new post-quantum encryptions that are coming out, the lattice-based encryptions, they all assume, very much like fully homomorphic does, that you will encrypt and never decrypt until you have the final piece of data. At what point do we cease to be able to see into encryption?
ultimately, at the end of the day, I'll bring it back to the piece that I think is the biggest blind spot today within organizations, which is north-south. There's a lot of focus on north-south traffic, comes in or goes out of your network. Where we're seeing the lack of visibility is the east-west, what happens inside your network. Yet, when you look at ransomware as an example, often we find ransomware or the dwell time is up to 18 months. There is the assumed breach, which is you assume that there's somebody already in the network. They're there for 18 months. That's the problem. How do you detect that you've got something inside your network? As I said earlier, and to your point, they're using encrypted traffic as a way to propagate within a network and going undetected, because the assumption is if it's encrypted, it's safe. That's a challenge.
Well, that raises an interesting question on its own. Should we ever have east-west encrypted traffic inside our network?
Encryption serves the purpose, which is protecting the data. There could be other reasons, not just security, but obviously PII or other related reasons why you want to have encrypted traffic. Encryption is fine as long as the security tools have the ability to inspect it when it's needed. The challenge today is that security tools are assuming, or the organization assumes, if it's encrypted, it's safe. And you can't make that assumption. That's the whole zero trust mandate, basically assumes that you've got to be able to break an inspector, you've got to be able to look inside. You can't assume that anything is safe.
But who makes that decision on how we deal with it? Typically, we'd look at the CISO. The problem is the CISO today is wearing so many hats, they're almost like a circus act. And we've got the problem of, are you a CISO who came up through IT, so you understand the technology? Are you a CISO who's done an MBA, and this is just your next appointment on the board before you become a more senior board member? Or are you simply an outside CISO who's come in to fix a problem? All of them have different focuses. All of them have different understandings of the organisation, of the problems you face, even of the security landscape. What do we do to address this, and what do we do for the CISO?
I feel very sympathetic to the plight of the CISO. Marketing, being a CMO, is one of what I would call the highest complexity to appreciation ratios, which is, it's a very complex job with lots of different hats. There was an HBR article, and we'll come back to the CISO in a minute, on three types of CMOs, because you don't have one. The appreciation, in terms of understanding and recognition, is low. And I think CISO is probably even worse. The complexity of that job is really challenging, and the pressure, because nobody recognizes the value of a CISO in the sense that if a breach happens, they get blamed, but if nothing happens, no one thinks about it. It's a challenge. It's a thankless job. Unless something bad happens, then you get blamed. It's becoming impossibly complex, to your point, that there's no really one CISO. Gartner talks about the BISO, or the Business Information Security Officer, and then there's the technical CISO that you alluded to. There is the figurehead or somebody who's managing the board expectations and keeping up with regulation and compliance. How do you help the CISO? First of all, is defining what the scope of their role is, so they're not assumed to be able to do all of these things. That's an impossible task, and it's just begging for failure. It's a more technical role. The second one is resourcing. The survey that I mentioned earlier, where we did a survey of 1,000 IT leaders, and there was 250 CISOs that replied to that survey. In the UK, Europe, US, and in Asia, the CISOs definitely appreciate the board attention because it's giving them the wherewithal to make changes within the organization. But it's a double-edged sword. It also comes with a lot of pressure and expectations. How do you help them? We define the role, making clear what their mandate is, and then providing them with the right resources. We can talk about that, because the right resources isn't necessarily more tools, because we're inundated with tools.
One way potentially to do that is we look at devolving the role. You have a CISO, but that CISO team might now incorporate the Chief Data Officer, Chief Compliance Officer, Chief AI Officer. We're seeing those roles appear, but those roles are being put on a peer level with the CISO, which suggests somebody else at a more senior board level is supposed to manage this. How do you see resourcing that CISO in terms of manpower? And we're not talking about bringing in people with degrees to sit in socks and everything else, but we're talking about people with an understanding and real responsibility.
Interesting. How do you organize? Ultimately, security is paramount within organizations. It's become a primary concern. We talked about earlier, before the recording, $400 billion being spent in security, which is just insane. And yet the number of breaches continue to grow. Something's not working. It's not that we don't have great technology. It's an industry that's moving incredibly fast. But in order to solve for it, we do need to solve for the organizational aspect. And I don't have a ready-made answer. Ultimately, I would say that maybe to your suggestion that you have these other roles that are security-related or supporting security that roll up to the CISO. Because obviously you need the data component, you need the technology stack. So maybe that is an approach that merits further investigation.
If we go back 20 years, we had network architects. These days, that role has been removed from many organizations. That role never really covered security. It was purely and simply about how did we design the network, how did we optimize. We've dropped that role and just made an assumption of network, which brings us back to our original problem of how do you detect north, south, east, west. Where do we link that challenge of the network back to the CISO and those roles? Whilst very big companies still have them, an increasing number don't. Smaller companies absolutely don't. Mid-sized companies generally don't. Yet those are the technical resources you'd expect the CISO to be able to draw from.
That's true. We're a proponent of having the network expertise because, as we talked about earlier, the cloud has abstracted that, but it doesn't mean that it's gone. It's just that we don't think about it. Yet, as we've talked about, it's foundational because you don't have the ability to architect, manage, obviously see what's going on in the network, then it causes a problem. That's a big part of the premise from our perspective on why we believe that although the spend continues to grow, the number of tools continue to grow, they are generally log-based when it comes to cloud. And that's where the growth is. The data center is continuing to be refreshed, but the growth is in cloud in its various forms, virtual, public, private, containers. The challenge is that the spend on security continues to go up. We're doing good things. We're investing more in the endpoint. We're doing multi-factor authentication. We're trying to do micro-segmentation of the network. All these are good, and yet the spend keeps going up. But as we said, breaches and ransomware have been at all-time highs. From a Gigamon perspective, it's because the big missing element is the visibility into the network. The network doesn't lie. You can only secure what you can see. If you can't see everything, there are just things that the logs will not pick up. Because logs will only pick up what the developers put inside the application. These are things that we want to trace. From our perspective, the big missing element is visibility into the network.
But that visibility into the network for most organizations means we're missing a tool. So they'll go and buy another one. 5 years ago, I was tracking maybe 875 security companies with my analyst hat on. Today, that's well north of 1,000. The problem is, that's tool sprawl. Security tools have become very much like office tools were 10, 12 years ago. Everybody's got shelves of this software. Whether they use it or not is a whole different thing. Many of the tools don't integrate well. Many of the SIEM and other tools out there don't take from every tool that we've got, nor do they analyze it. The silver bullet moment for most people seems to be immediately throw in, let's have some AI. Yes, it's very good at handling large amounts of data and doing some sorting for me. But in reality, from your perspective, particularly given the complexity of that network, how effective is AI in being able to shift grunt work off my security team and then leave them dealing with real issues, not ending up giving them a whole bunch of false positives?
I do think AI will help with filtering. When you have tools that can pick up lots of potential issues, then you have SOCs are becoming completely overloaded with all of these alerts going off. AI can play a role in filtering out what's really noise from what's really important. But back to what we were saying earlier, which is that the challenge is that there's lots and lots of tools. In fact, there's too many tools. In our survey, tool consolidation or proliferation was a top concern for CISOs because they recognize they're spending too much, that we're not getting the value of all these tools. They don't work together, and yet we still have growing breaches. It's not working.
But where do they start to consolidate tools? The moment a CISO in a mid to large organization raises the word consolidation, there'll be people in their teams who've got their favored tools who will go into a full defense mode. There'll be people who'll go and talk to the vendors supplying their tools, who will go into a full sales mode as to why they're better and make promises about how they can do what tool X, Y, and Z does. But the bottom line is very few organizations have a coherency of platform into which they can plug and remove tools as part of consolidation. When you talk to CISOs, what does consolidation mean? Is it just cut my spend? Or do they have active programs to look at overlap and how they can reduce tools, but at the same time increase visibility through better integration?
So part of it is spend, for sure, because there's more money going in, but still limited. They recognize they're still not as secure as they want to be. Part of it is that the gaps between the tools, and so you need to find a way to close those gaps. A big part of the value proposition that we bring is, because we're not a tool, maybe you didn't make that clear earlier, we are a layer between the infrastructure, between the hybrid cloud network and the tool set. We talked about the filtering that we do, deduplication of the network traffic, but we're in many ways this fabric that the tools can plug into. So we help with tool consolidation in that you can very easily test out different tools plugging in out of this fabric without taking down your network. So it makes it easier to POC or to try things, and it makes it easy to swap things out. Part of our value proposition is we're an enabler for this tool consolidation movement that is happening, because it has to happen, because as you mentioned, 1,000+ vendors, a lot of these are good, and the newer AI tools are good too, but if you can't see, and this is again back to the value proposition we provide, if you can't see something, you can't secure it. Visibility on the network is a core of what we provide to whatever the tool is.
I can go back 30 years to when we started putting local area networks in. One of the challenges we had then was visibility. Today, visibility has become even more complex, because visibility and the objects on my network are no longer about endpoints and users. In fact, they make up maybe 5% of most people's Active Directory. It's all of that IoT, all of those services that pieces of software need to run. And in a hybrid cloud environment where that cloud end is changing all the time, and users are wanting new SaaS applications and things, where do you get a real state of visibility? Because whilst, as you said, you can see things on the network, it's identifying what it is on the network that's the challenge. So how do we get to that point?
It's complex on the network. We'll act as anything past it. We have a lot of customers in manufacturing or in utilities or in healthcare that have a lot of devices on the network. As you know, that's where the breaches come in now. There's the famous example of MGM and the fish tank breach got in through the thermostat in the fish tank. It's a challenge. But anything that passes on the wire or on the network will pick up and provide visibility. When it goes to cloud, we talked about encryption already, but the other big challenge in the cloud is the ephemeral nature of the applications and containers. They're popping up. And so the technology we have created allows you to have visibility inside the container as well. Whether it's an IoT device or it's any type of cloud or a containerized application, our technology now allows visibility into that and feeds it back to the center that then plugs all the security tools can kind of plug into.
I mentioned network architects just now. You've talked about visibility here. We've also touched on AI. At what point does AI start to look at what these objects are on the network and begin to give me segmentation models? If I go back to the days of Novell in the late 80s, early 90s, we were limited on the number of clients that could talk to any server. So by its very nature, we segmented our network traffic to what needed to be done. When we removed that limit, we talk a lot about segmentation. We very rarely see real segmentation inside an organization because it's seen as being an inhibitor to people gaining access. But there's clearly a case here. If we have the visibility, a smart tool like an AI can be advising an architect and from there to the CISO as to how we need to better segment the network for security. Do you see that happening? Do you see that as something that's maybe a new phase that's going to be happening in the next few years?
I'm not sure I see it today, but I would agree with your assessment. This is clearly AI being able to understand the patterns of a network and its use and be able to apply and segment based on business workflows or whatever other use cases and be able to dynamically segment. It makes total sense.
One of the things that then spins out of this is we've talked about the money spend. If we were spending money on anything else, vehicles in the motor pool, office furniture, photocopiers, even printers, we'd have some idea of what the ROI is of doing that. If we were buying a new mainframe, somebody would do an ROI on why we needed that mainframe. When it comes to security, what does ROI mean? How do we know whether we're just simply a bunch of gamblers in a betting shop chasing a dead horse, or whether or not we're on a winner?
There isn't really no positive, tangible ROI to security investment. There's only the potential negative downside of something going wrong if you aren't secure enough. As we talked about earlier, even though we're spending a ton of money, the breaches are getting worse. I would say right now the ROI is probably negative. I don't know. How do you quantify ROI for security tools? Obviously, the vendors are making good money and people are investing. But before the recording, we talked about the FUD in the industry, and there's a lot of that too. The challenges are legitimate, and so you need to invest in the technology. But how do you know you're investing in the right technology? Are you investing too much or too little? All we can say right now is that the investment is increasing, but our security posture isn't. And so there is a fundamental disconnect that we need to address.
So what's broken in that security posture? Is it too much compliance? Is it people not focusing on the right things? I'm not going to blame the end users, because quite frankly, it's too easy a target for some things, but we make it hard for them as an industry at times. What is missing in getting that posture more effective?
We talked about the role of the leader of security, CISO. It's a really challenging job. And that world is changing so fast. AI has just made it worse. We're on a journey here. I don't think it's an overnight thing. And I don't think it's one vendor or any vendor, speaking as a vendor, that's going to solve the problem. I think it's a lot of education. A lot of the breaches still happen through the person, insider threats or someone leveraging social hacking. There's always human element. And the only thing you can do is educate. In our organization, we spend a lot of time because we want to lead by example. So we spend a lot of time educating our employees on security best practices, how to avoid some of these things. AI will help the tools get smarter and take out a lot of the grunt work and take out the overload that we talked about earlier, because it's just impossible to keep up with the volume of what's happening. That's definitely going to be beneficial. Getting the right organizational structure so that the CISO has the right access to the right resources and the ability to affect the right change. Because today, there's still political infighting and challenges from being able to affect things. You may have good intentions, but if you don't have the organizational structure to be able to affect changes, it doesn't do any good. Those are some of the elements that I would look at to see how we make progress in addressing this gap between the investment and the effect of that investment.
Compliance becomes one of those key metrics, doesn't it? As you said earlier, you get this CISO where nothing happens, and they become almost anonymous. Honestly, if I was a CISO, that's the sort of CISO I want to be, because if nothing's happening and nobody's shouting at me, I've clearly got this nailed.
Yeah, got a good job so far anyway.
But compliance changes quickly. Our attitudes to compliance change quickly. We're finally starting to see compliance tools come along that actually do more than just have a board sit around and work out from a bunch of regulations what we should be doing, and give us tools by which we can have metrics where we can audit. How many CISOs do you come across who are in a position where they have the right tools to be able to monitor what's going on in compliance? Because, again, one ROI measurement could be how little we're spending on compliance breach.
I don't know. We know that compliance and the new regulations is a top concern from the survey that we did for CISOs. We know they're thinking about it. What technology are you using to be able to monitor compliance? I don't know.
How do they keep up with compliance?
With difficulty. The main ones that we hear about in the US from the federal government, Zero Trust, that's been a mandate, and we're quite involved. We were involved in the Dreamport project, which is a DoD effort to instantiate the first Zero Trust architecture, and we were part of that instantiation. So we're pretty deeply involved with the Zero Trust movement within the federal government. In Europe, we have the DORA, which is another regulation for the financial industry. There's many more in healthcare and others, but it's probably going to get worse. There will be more of these. Back to maybe our earlier conversation, that's where you split the role. You got the technical CISO, and you got somebody who's more focused on risk and compliance, and that's really their full-time job.
The one thing we can be sure of is that risk and compliance is something boards understand. You can't run any size of organisation if you don't get risk at the very least. And we know that conversation has changed. 10, 15 years ago, people wandered into the boardroom meetings and used FUD. These days, they still do, but at least they call it risk. But there is a more serious side to all of that. We see numbers from very large companies who are breached. But that doesn't filter down to mid to small companies. When you're running a mid-sized organisation with a turnover of 5 million, and somebody comes along and says, the latest survey from a certain three-letter tech company says that the cost of a breach is three times my turnover, nobody takes any notice. They just dismiss it. How do we make risk a conversation at every organisation? Because this goes back to the supply chain problem.
Back to what we said earlier about education. Vendors are trying to educate the market. We've got our take on it, but we're trying to educate the market in terms of the challenges and potential solutions. There are models out there that help organizations quantify risk. There's FAIR. It's a model that you can use to quantify the impact of a breach and the risk potential for your organization. That's part of it as well. A standard part of corporate practice is education for entrepreneurs or business leaders. How do you assess the risk of an organization? And then maybe what you were alluding to earlier, tools or technology that can allow you to quantify, to measure, to manage risk. There is technology out there. I just don't think it's that common today. But maybe that's something that needs to happen. It just needs to be something that is part of a standard toolkit for any organization of any size. They need to have some, because it's become primordial to the existence of an organization or the fundamental challenges an organization might face if they are breached or they have a ransomware attack. Right? Just becoming probably bigger concern for smaller organizations, because breach, maybe they don't have anything that's that important that anyone would care about. But holding their assets ransom could be the death knell to any organization of any size.
Breaches happen, and we're never going to get away from breaches. One of the problems we have when we have a breach is, for the majority of the business, the primary focus is, how do we get back up and running? Secondary to that is, what went wrong? But in that first phase, we often destroy a lot of forensic data that we need. If we come back to what we talked about early on, and that is the immutability of the network data, how much more attention is being paid now by forensic teams to what was going on the network, not just on the day or when we noticed it, but a month, 2 months, 5 months beforehand? And how do we manage to keep and start to build on all that data to give us more alarms?
Average dwell time of a breach is 18 months. So in order to be able to understand how to better protect the organization, you need to understand the history. You discover the breach. We talked about earlier the problems with discovering is that some of these things just propagate inside the network in encrypted traffic, and so they're not detected because it's assumed that it's safe. It's very important to be able to work back through that history to understand what happened. Also, for damage control, to know what was infected. For me, that's a big part of the value of the network data and that history of what transpired over the network over that time period, as a way to be able to learn and then implement the necessary changes to prevent that happening going forward.
Normally at this point on a podcast, I'd say, imagine you're sitting in front of a room of people. I'm going to turn that around a little here, because you've just had this report come out, which has thrown up a whole bunch of interesting stats. For you, what were the three things that stood out from this report that people should be taking notice of?
I'll recap, because some of them are what we talked about. One is this dissonance between the fact that 3/4 of the respondents trust the encrypted data on their network, and yet 93% of malware uses encrypted traffic to propagate. You have to be able to think about how to inspect. You can't assume encrypted traffic is safe. That's one big one. The second one is the pressure on CISOs right now is unsustainable. We have to be able to help them organizationally, from a resource perspective, from a mandate perspective, from a job definition, all the things we talked about. We've got to be able to help them do their jobs, because there is nothing really more important than making sure an organization is secure and is compliant. The third one is just the cost, how much we're spending. We're spending an inordinate amount of money on trying to secure the organization, and yet the attacks are increasing. There's something broken there. We've talked about some of the potential areas. One of the roles that we have as an evangelist, I would say, for the network, forget about our technology, look at the network. Look to the network as an important source of truth, immutable source of truth, in order to be able to better manage your security posture.
Carl, thank you for talking with us today.
Very glad to have had the conversation. This is important stuff.